Hi everyone, Riley here. Jake and I just recorded a conversation that we had about the ongoing beef between Drake and Kendrick Lamar. We were originally planning to record it anyway, and then this Not Like Us song dropped. We listened to that. That didn't really kind of affect, I think, the main points we wanted to make. So I'm going to present that conversation that we had here. I haven't really edited it, mainly because I don't have time. I want to get it out, but also because I feel like, we make a lot of points. We go around the history a little bit and hopefully kind of convey how complicated the situation is right now, how exciting it is, how thrilling it is, but also how kind of exhausting and even a little bit uncomfortable it is too. It's a weird place to be in, but and we had thoughts on it, wanted to document them. So if you're interested, hope you'll stick around to hear what we have to say, and hope to hear from you in the comments below. Here's the video.
I've been thinking about this a lot these past few weeks. In the words of our friends, De La Soul, stakes is high.
Hi, 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 hi.
The thing is, with all of this right now, the thing is, people have been, there's this sentiment that's been going around since Meet the Grams dropped, where people are saying this thing. They're saying this isn't hip hop beef anymore. And here's the thing. I have been inherently skeptical of this entire charade. We'll elaborate on said entire charade as we talk about this. But I've been skeptical of this from day one, obviously, because whenever there's a hip hop beef, my first thought, and everyone's first thought, should be this is fake. Because the idea is that two people feud and then they increase
It's
their
battle
profile.
rap, right? Like
Yeah, battle rap
it's
is. It is inherently advantageous to both artists to sling mud at each other because whatever is said about them at the end of the day, they're staying in people's minds, and that is the most effective form of marketing in the world. That said, the reason I have been skeptical, never confident when it comes to this stuff, is purely because of the presence of Kendrick. Now, I need to say this out of the gate so that we can put it aside and so I don't have to constantly keep addressing myself, because this is the most tiring shit about all of this, in that yes, it is going to be blatant that not only Riley and I are going to be veering towards being like, yeah, we want to see Kendrick win because of the type of music consumer and listeners that we are, but the thing is about this is that Kendrick's presence makes this different. I'm not a dick rider when I say that. It's because doing that Future diss was incredibly out of character for him. Yes, people bring up the control verse all the time, but the thing is with the control verse is that I feel like people in their memories make that into something that it's not. The control verse is not a diss track. The control verse is a declaration of intent that proved to be an advertisement for To Pimp a Butterfly. That was not Kendrick taking those guys down when he said he wanted to kill all of them. It was, I am declaring myself better than these people, and unless they do something about it, I'm right. That's not a diss. This pointedly is. But the thing that makes this different is that Kendrick getting involved means that we're seeing a conflict emerge out of hip hop that we have never seen before on this scale. The last time two figures of this size battled it out in an arena like this was Jay and Nas. A lot of people were going to say Pusha T and Drake, but to me, Pusha T and Drake is a benchmark moment because that to me is the moment where the old idea of the hip hop diss died. Both because Pusha T's diss to Drake, the story of Adidon, is one of the most ruthless, cutting, brutal things that has ever happened in hip hop that did not end up with someone dying as a result of it. It's bad, it's rough, it's nasty. But what it didn't do was kill its intended target. That was, by and large, the apex of the form. And everyone saw it that way. That's what people took from that. But Drake still persists. So, frankly, that's really where this story begins, if we think about it. But the Jay and Nas comparison to me holds water, because that, to me, is this same conflict, but rendered more subtextual. Because Jay was the commercial arm of hip-hop. Nas was the artistic arm of hip-hop. That's not to say that they didn't overlap on those interests, because they absolutely did. Jay was an albums artist, and Nas did very well commercially and made many efforts to be successful commercially. But that was what they represented, and in many ways what they became. It's why Nas is having a commercial renaissance, and it's why Jay-Z has basically all but stopped making music altogether. That is indicative of their character and why that beef happened in the first place. But now we have Kendrick, who is Nas on a much bigger scale. We already interpret, and keep in mind, the lens in which beef is viewed is the court of public opinion. So when Riley and I talk in these terms, we do mean that that is what matters. It's what people take away from these conflicts, not necessarily what is intended on behalf of these artists. So that's an important thing to keep in mind when we talk about this. But to me, this is a revival of this conflict where Kendrick is the artistic leg of hip hop and Drake is the commercial end, except it's not even subtext. It's explicit. Kendrick is saying the industry hates you. It has hated you. And the reason why that was smart wasn't because it was, you know, a good dig at Drake. It's because it's true. And the people, this is key, the people who would side with Kendrick have been saying these things. And Kendrick is playing to that strength. He's playing to an audience that knows they already don't like Drake. Because it gets a bit lost now because of his popularity that when Drake came up, like, you know, end of the 2000s, start of the 2010s, he was mercilessly mocked. He was like, the industry did not like him because they viewed him as soft. They viewed him as feminine. They teased him mercilessly. They said, you aren't welcome here. And Drake was in his feelings about it. It well documented. But what this did is it lit a kind of fire under Drake, because he knew he could achieve a certain kind of success, and he did. He did so very smartly, and he was very savvy about it. And he got that undeniable success, success so strong, so powerful, that even Pusha T couldn't kill it. But that didn't change anything. It didn't. And when the Pusha T beef happened, that still didn't change anything. So the idea of the concept of a rap beef died there, in my opinion, because its effectiveness, its utility as a device, as we explore it, as like what it means for this feud to happen and what is achieved by it, there's no results there. It's done. Like, we can talk about the minor feuds that have popped up over the years and like Eminem and Machine Gun Kelly and stuff, but that's outside baseball. That's different. And again, it's different for white rappers, and race plays a role in this, whether you want to admit it or not. But then this year, to catch up to speed, we are in the middle of the drama, and I'm not going to recount all of it because I'm sure we're going to get into some weeds here. And you all know that. If you want a recounting of everything that's happened so far, go to one of the many YouTube channels that have done that already, if you haven't, because they will do it more clearly and more concisely than we have. But basically, Kendrick fired the first shot on a feature on a Future song, and now they have been trading blows ever since. And now, Riley, the thing I want to talk about first in regards to this is J. Cole. Both because he kind of exists on an island, and because I think there's something really interesting to learn from J. Cole's story in all of this. Because if you go back and listen to the first diss, the line that everyone took away from that is, fuck the big three, it's just big me. And that's sort of an implicit diss of J. Cole as a member of that big three.
As the person who made the big three reference in his song as well.
Yes, that was a reference that he made on the song First Person Shooter. Now, this did definitely miff Kendrick a little bit, but to me, like, that was not intended to be a diss to J. Cole. I do not think that Kendrick had any intention of going after Cole at all, frankly, because what I've been saying since the start of this is that my reaction and the reaction of people whose opinions I'm really frustrated with was the same with J. Cole at first, because I find him increasingly frustrating as an artist and a presence. And at first I was like, what are you doing here, man? Get out of here. Stop this. This is not who you are. This is not what you want to do. This is like, people are your fucking hype beast ass fan base, and like, you know, hip hop podcasts are driving your decision making here. Stop it. Whereas everyone else is just like, he's not as good as the other two, and that's why he shouldn't be there. And like, regardless of whatever you may think about that, it is what it is. But to me, it feels like J. Cole maybe overstepped his bounds at first, and then either through his own volition or perhaps someone informing him of what was to come, which is looking increasingly more likely as the hours go by, not even days, but J. Cole releases a diss against Kendrick, and you know, it was received the way it was received, which is very, very poorly by the establishment, by everyone. Even Cole fans were disappointed in him. And then he took it back. And then the disappointment just kind of increased twofold. And people were, you know, they were going after Cole harder than they ever had. But initially, when this happened, Riley and I, we found ourselves in complete agreement in that we both thought this was the smartest move for J. Cole to make. I mean, like, it just felt like the right thing to do, because J. Cole is the kind of rapper that does not belong in a rap beef like this. It's just not him. And he's feeling all of these pressures from fame, these societal pressures, these masculine pressures. I'm sure, again, him being biracial and Kendrick calling lots of things like that into question, that's probably an incentive and motivator too. But Riley, I want to sort of turn the torch over to you here, is that what exactly about the J. Cole aspect of this is the most like revealing to you? Because I feel like it's a lot more prescient now that we're sitting with what we're sitting with.
J. Cole is a useful illustration of what this beef has become, what maybe you could make the argument that beef in debt, that rap beef is becoming more generally, which is a very different thing to, I think, what it had been prior to that. I honestly think that the extent to which, this is my perspective as well, but so I'm not the most informed person in the world, but I do think that the extent to which rap beef is viewed as this kind of like historically life or death, you know, serious as murder thing is kind of overstated, to be honest.
Yeah, yes, definitely.
There have been historical beefs which have had tragic consequences, but I don't think that holding up, you know, Tupac and Biggie or whatever as a representative like encapsulation of all rap, of all of beef as a phenomenon within hip-hop is fair.
It doesn't represent the concept social utility at all.
No, and also, like, you know, Tupac and Biggie didn't respectively get shot because they had beef. They got shot because they were in, there were gang connections that were involved in hip-hop and in the circles of
gang
which they
connections
ran.
To the gang connections to Tupac. Haha, good thing that's not relevant anymore.
Well, just forget about all of that. Like that's the thing that happened there. It wasn't that, like, it wasn't that either of them got shot because one of them said some mean words on a song. All right.
No.
That's not what rap beef is about. This shit is not about violence, like real violence. This shit, rap beef is about clout, but it's also about like fun. Like it's about exercising. Like rap is a sport, like to a large extent. Like,
Let me interrupt you real quick to just make my point here more salient so I don't end up repeating myself later, is that when people say that, is that a lot of people I know are just being like, oh, people are reacting to this beef like it's wrestling, and there's layers to that based on what this is. But the thing is that in my opinion, hip hop beef and wrestling are the same thing. And that's because I take both incredibly seriously, because they're art. Wrestling and hip hop are storytelling. They are methods of delivery for a message, they are things that are made that are meant to be interpreted by people. You have to get something from the experience of them. And I feel like they're being viewed in this very utilitarian way that completely ignores this aspect of their construction, which is completely pivotal to understanding what this is all about in the first place.
Well, wrestling and rap beef are sports where the, you know, the instrument being wielded essentially is like the personas of the people involved, like the way that they're perceived, ideas about who they are, about, you know, about what they stand for, and about what supporting one of them makes you as a fan, what they represent, basically. So, you know, beef essentially like it's an exercise in establishing your beliefs, what you represent, in contrast to some kind of opposing force that, by contrasting with it, legitimizes you and kind of establishes you as something that people can rally behind, that can stand for something, that represents something in opposition to something else, right? Like that's the whole point. The point is to kind of establish yourself and say, I'm for this, I represent this, this other person doesn't represent these things, and here is why they're not representing them, or their hypocrisy and claiming to represent them but not backing it up, or whatever. Here's why that makes them less legitimate than me. It's about legitimacy. It's about perception. It's about, you know, respect and seriousness. You know, it's about all of these kind of intangible things that make you kind of more superior because you carry a kind of cachet by, you know, embodying those things that this other person doesn't embody. So that's what it is. It's about kind of personality, and it's about what you stand for, and it's about all those kinds of things. It should not come as a surprise that in recent years, with the way that the eras of the internet and of social media in particular have shaped culture and have shaped how we consume the lives of celebrities, that therefore beef, like the sport of hip hop, the idea of clashing personas that represent certain different things that you align yourselves with, it should not come as a surprise, given the nature of social media in the last decade, that therefore the potential of these clashes would become more sort of salient, would become more kind of meaningful, would become more intensified. Because now more than ever, it matters what you represent. It matters who you are. It matters how good you are. It matters what you have done. It matters what you stand for. And it matters that you are on the right side of history. That's just a cultural thing. That's not even a hip hop thing. But it makes sense that that kind of moral absolutism would bleed into the way that pop culture functions in terms of hip hop. That suddenly we would be holding certain artists to these kinds of standards, and therefore the sport of beef would have to kind of incorporate that as a tool, as a kind of part of how it functions. You know, it's not just anymore, I'm real and this person's fake. It's I'm good and this person's bad. And that's sort of how the nature of beef has changed. People don't care as much about things like authenticity, although they do care to an extent. It is part of it, but it's less a part of it because it's good that you're authentic as much as it is that it's bad if you're a hypocrite. And that's kind of been a lot of the angle towards Drake as well, is it's not that he's inauthentic, it's that he's a hypocrite. It's that he, you know, claims to stand for this and he benefits from the cachet of having all of these associations, yet also attempts to hide from them or steer himself away from them or not kind of live that life. Yeah. So that's normal. That's fine. That's kind of standard for hip hop, to kind of pick up on those sorts of hypocrisies, point them out, and kind of just sort of delegitimize your opponent, kind of, you know, play these sorts of games essentially to up your standing, especially when there's like this dynamic between Drake and Kendrick, where it is the kind of commercial beast of Drake versus the kind of, you know, real sort of truthful, soulful artist of Kendrick. You know, that dichotomy is very powerful, you know, and obviously there are ways in which they bleed together and they're not like perfectly distinct from one another in that respect, but the dichotomy is so powerful that it completely overcomes that. If it matters to you more who is more commercially successful, who has demonstrated more kind of tangible success, and you value money as the means of showcasing that, then you're more likely to side with Drake. If you believe in integrity, and if you believe in a kind of, you know, it, in some senses, like Kendrick is almost kind of conservative and traditionalist in his approach, relatively speaking, because it's very much about values with Kendrick. It's very much about kind of, you know,
the
adhering
preservation
to,
of culture.
Yeah, and you know, following in the example that Tupac set forth, you know, whatever that specifically means to you, you know, that's a whole other kettle of fish. But Kendrick's very like much of a kind of staunch traditionalist in this sense, whereas Drake is kind of like, you know, he's Drake has, in his view, and I think this is a fair way of viewing Drake's career as well, fought really hard for the success that he's had. Like you said, you kind
Oh,
of
most
alluded to.
assuredly.
You kind of alluded to the things he had to overcome in terms of, you know, having a being taken seriously in the earlier years of his career. And you can make the argument that he's worked really hard to overcome those things. He's overpowered this image that he had, you know, of a, as a kind of like soft person who couldn't be taken seriously, setting aside all of the like complicated things that that all says about masculinity and the way we view it. That's a whole different kettle of fish. I don't want to get into it. But just acknowledging that and setting it aside, Drake was seen as soft. Drake was seen as not a real, like not, you know, masculine enough to kind of hold up or be a kind of representative for this culture, which is so masculinized. And so he worked really, really hard to overcome that. You know, he got swole and he, you know, changed his attitude. But, you know, deep down, he has. He's the same kind of person he's always been. You can't really fundamentally change who you are. So aspects of Drake, you know, his penchant for emotionality and his insecurity and his deeply wounded masculinity, like and his difficult relationships with women that come out of having been treated as a fairy, basically, his whole life, that stuff's still a part of him. And you know, with Kendrick, it's like Kendrick had a much I would say Kendrick had a much faster ascent to celebrity. Like he had a lot of years where he was grinding in mixtape obscurity, and but he also, I would say, from the time he kind of got his major deal and to the time that he released Good Kid Mad City, you know, he had a really fast ascent, and that was a really big commercial peak for him. And it was like but it was very clear immediately from the gate with Kendrick's career that he was kind of more interested in being a conceptual artist in a way that Drake just wasn't. You know, Drake was the confessional guy. Drake was the guy kind of telling you, here's how I'm feeling right now. Here's what's happening in my life. You know, in a lot of ways, the way that Drake operated even 10, 12 years ago is very aligned with how pop stars nowadays operate. You know, here's what I'm going through right now. Here's how I'm feeling about it. It's no surprise Drake's very ahead of his time in that sense.
Yes.
Whereas Kendrick, in being that kind of staunch conceptual artist who styles himself around a very kind of archaic and classical idea of what an artist is, you know, he doesn't have as much relevance because that idea of an artist isn't as culturally relevant anymore. So their trajectories therefore move differently. Kendrick, you know, Kendrick has made enough moves to kind of ingratiate himself commercially and have a certain level of success to be kind of taken seriously on that level. And, you know, with Damn as well and To Pimp a Butterfly, both of those were kind of conscious moves to sort of uphold and speak to, you know, very deeply rooted cultural things that firmly aligned him with his blackness and with his roots in Compton as well. So, but also at the same time as that, he's just not demonstrated the same level of consistent interest in maintaining and upholding a commercial career in the way that you're expected to. You know, he took fucking 5 years, was it 5 or 6 years between Damn and Mr. Morale? It was a long time. So that has kind of put him sort of out of the picture a little bit. It's made him feel a little bit more like a relic of a previous era in a way that Drake doesn't. So I think a lot of this beef, and some people might think that this is a bit of a shallow way to read it, but to me, a lot of this beef, I think, is just fundamentally about Kendrick knowing he needs to reassert his place in culture, like he did with Damn, where it was like To Pimp a Butterfly was not a huge commercial hit, so he had to kind of go back and do some radio stuff while still being him. And you know, Mr. Morale was like a very heady album that the culture, in quotes, didn't really vibe with, and so here he is getting back into a mode where it's like, I'm putting myself back at the front of culture again. And it was definitely a decision for him to say that, you know, on that one song, I think it was on Euphoria, where he said, like, he speaks, this is what the culture's feeling about Drake. You know, like, you can make the argument that it's maybe not necessarily, but also maybe it is. You know, he said it confidently enough that it became true.
Well, that's the thing, is that I think he is getting at a very real industry divide, because I mean, we are seeing there are movers and shakers in hip hop who do represent a kind of old value system in hip hop. And when we say that, you know, Kendrick's mindset is conservative, hip hop as an art form is what Kendrick views he is defending here in this dynamic. And the reason this is also complicated, and if I can circle back very briefly to J. Cole and how this
I
works,
was
is that
getting there.
Riley, is that
Slowly.
the dynamic that you're talking about here is very important, because that dynamic has no room for J. Cole in it. And he very smartly recognized, through whatever means necessary, that he was able to dodge whatever this was, because he knew that this was going to escalate to some degree. To what extent, we don't know, but I think he could read the writing on the wall and determine that Kendrick, if he didn't get it from a direct source, he probably did, you know, some inward looking and thought Kendrick wouldn't do this if he didn't have a really goddamn good reason to. And part of the reason why this was so difficult to unfold is that there was that skeptical part of me that was still just like, okay, but I still like until up until Meet the Grams dropped, I was purely going to argue that this was mostly an ego thing, that this was mostly a pride thing for both of them, for both Kendrick and Drake. I thought that this was going to be, you know, be probably a lot of mudslinging and probably be really drawn out, but I thought it was probably going to end with a little bit of a whimper. And then that happened, and things are different now, because the world feels like it changed in the last, you know, 21 hours. So here's the thing about all of this, is that dynamic that Riley was just talking about, is that one of the reasons I had reticence about my reticence is that Kendrick and Drake were both so eager to slot into their respective roles as the face and heel, if I can use wrestling terms. Like, immediately, everything about the way this has been playing out to me has been Kendrick stepping into a role that is very much expected of him, and expected of him from the people where that matters the most to him. So he's driven. He's in this, clearly. And the same can be said for Drake, but it's really more of a like a, I'm so big, you can't kill me now. I split this industry in half between the people who value hip hop as a result of, you know, struggle and you know, it is a form of poetry, and people who value hip hop as, you know, a vehicle for sales, for commercial, for capital. And they just ran with that to the extent where, when I'm looking back at the way this is all playing out, Drake has been purely reactive this whole time, and Kendrick has been the instigator every step of the way. He's kept him on the ropes each time, even when Drake is trying to pretend that it doesn't bother him, because that's the best move he can pull. It's the smartest thing he can do. That said, I do think that they know that, because his responses to me reek of a PR team. Drake's responses to me, and I don't want, let me be clear. I think that as a beef, and we should just make this clear off the bat for anybody watching, is that yes, we're Kendrick fans, and it's no secret that we would probably be rooting for Kendrick in this. But when we're talking about who we're rooting for or who's winning, we're missing the point. Like, that is the least interesting part of this conversation, and it's starting to be the thing that people are the most obsessed with. And I feel like that does miss the forest for the trees just a little bit, because of some key bits of context here. Mostly in that, again, like I said earlier, this is different. The stakes are high, and the stakes are different because rap beef as we knew it doesn't exist anymore. What we're living in is an unprecedented moment where there have been bubblings simmering under the surface, but we're seeing some real cultural toxicity that has been manifesting in music for the last 15 years. And it's finally just, it's not subtext, it's not subliminals, it's not being hidden under the surface. It's, this is what this is about now.
Yeah. And like the thing with J. Cole that I was getting to was that like he doesn't slot into this because he wasn't thinking about it as in the same way that certainly that Kendrick was thinking about it as well, and maybe that Drake was thinking about it, or maybe he didn't realize how serious it was going to get. You know, Cole is old school too. Cole was going at this in the old school fashion, in the old fashioned style of beef, right? Like he was having fun with it. He was poking fun at Kendrick's, you know, relevance.
He was playing by the rules.
Yeah, exactly. He was doing the standard thing that I was talking about before. And we can't really know the exact reasons why Cole apologized. A lot of people have been saying that he knew what was coming, where someone made him aware of what was coming. And maybe that's true. There's a strong case for that. I think it certainly seems appealing now. And for a lot of people who were absolutely incensed by the way that he backed off, it's funny to see a lot of them being like, oh, no, actually, he was really smart because he saw what was coming. It's like,
My timeline this morning was nothing but memes that just said J. Cole right now and like 40 different screenshots of SpongeBob of characters just going.
Yeah. Well, like,
because
I saw
like everybody is backing bat. And that's sort of the lesson that I think should be learned here, is that like when we're in the moment and we're judging these things, like, and we're so obsessed with who's participating, who's winning, who's got a diss and who's, you know, got receipts, or who's like making this into basically investigative journalism instead of hip hop beef, is that when we're focusing on that, we're not focusing on the fact that it's also, we should say, equally as likely that J. Cole was just telling the truth, and that he genuinely came to a realization and went, you know, maybe I shouldn't be here. Maybe this isn't where I'm meant to be at all anyway. And when he spoke at that like Dreamville thing, he could have been just telling the God's honest truth. That is totally possible.
And this is what I was getting to like half an hour ago before I went on a massive circle to get back to this point, which is
we're gonna have to get there anyway.
Yeah, exactly. Which is that Cole was playing a different game. And it's become very clear that what Kendrick and Drake are doing is the logical extension of the point that you have made about the death of beef in that sense. Because now they're, because the Pusha T Drake thing, and I don't know how representative we can make that of beef in general, because it's really hard to say, but it's certainly representing any beef that involves Drake at this point, where it's like there is an expectation set. Like that was such a massive moment where the nature of how a beef could be won became defined around a massive life-altering revelation. And the thing that has always been complicated about that as well is that like the devastation of like, oh, Drake is hiding a child. Like if you're a celebrity, there is nothing wrong with wanting to keep your children out
of
the spotlight.
The rest of that diss is so much meaner than anything that Pusha T says about Adonis in it at all. Like,
and it's
again,
funny. It's funny how history is repeating itself here as well, because everyone is talking about Drake has a second hidden child, and that is coming first in people's reaction video titles and thumbnails and their tweets before it is coming to the other stuff. And the other stuff is where this gets difficult.
Really hairy.
Because the hiding a child thing, like that set a new kind of expectation for like, for a beef to like, and especially a beef against Drake to have a kind of meat to be meaningful in any way, that is now your floor, Right, you have to somehow pierce that in terms of like the magnitude of what you reveal. And so Kendrick obviously is orchestrated, and it seems very obvious to me that he's had this planned out from the beginning, because I don't, it, none of it, none of his moves make any sense to me if he doesn't have that level of foresight.
I 100% agree with you.
So he's recognized that the current state of this sort of hip hop beef, these expectations, how, what do you have to do to go up to go and get Drake, has this incredible unassailable like floor basically that you've got to pass to make a dent. And what I liked about the beef initially was that I could tell that Kendrick understood this, but he wasn't going for it. He was meticulously deconstructing so many other of the cracks in Drake's facade, beautifully, I would say, especially with Euphoria and 616 in LA. He was really like just poking and spreading those cracks in the glass ceiling. And to me, that felt like that felt more effective and more interesting than if he were to have some kind of Drake has a second child bombshell. Now, there is a second child bombshell allegation from Kendrick, but what makes it interesting is not that. It is the way that Kendrick has deployed that in the context of this massive portrait he's painted of Drake as a danger to women, right? And this is the thing that's slightly like not quite appreciated when the diss zeroes into Drake as a second child. And this is the only reason why I don't absolutely hate, to be honest, what it has become, is because I do think there is something really, like, I think there's something really artful about the way that Kendrick has built this around this meticulously constructed portrait of Drake's, you know, attitudes and history with women. And the things that are problematic about that. Now, Drake recognizes this, and it's worth noting as well that in the Family Matters diss, which is a very effective diss song, I will say, one of the best
I just want to
songs.
say out the gate, Drake has performed admirably, at least in terms of measuring the quality of what he's delivered so far in this, in
He's
a
on
way that
fire in Family Matters.
surprised me.
Like, he's absolutely on fire. The flow he hits from the second, from the
If
first
we're
beat
talking
switch in that
about
song,
song
great.
quality, that's the best thing he's made in years, easily.
So he recognized with that what Kendrick's angle was, this idea that Drake is a danger to women. So he knew the angle that he had to take. And this is where, because Family Matters came first by about an hour. Everyone, all of us will remember this day. Drake devastated Kendrick in that song. Now, again, all of this is like, it's hard to see. The lines are so tough, right? Because we don't know what's real. We don't know what isn't. It's a dangerous, weird, ugly place. But Drake devastated Kendrick in that song. He said that Kendrick and his partner no longer lived together because Kendrick was abusive towards her and essentially drove their relationship apart and, you know, was physically violent as well. He said some other things that were a little bit like, that I think were weak, to be
Insinuating
fair.
something about a brother of his, insinuating stuff about him not wanting to hang out with light-skinned people, just
Well,
the
he said as
Drake
well
shit.
that his that Kendrick's wife being mixed somehow undermines Kendrick's own sense of like his blackness, which I think is so stupid, but I'm not qualified to talk about that sort of stuff.
I think that Drake is being very smart about a lot of this, but at the same time, that's what I mean when I say that a lot of what he's saying has felt very like curated and
Well,
corporate.
he couldn't resist going back at Kendrick for like the whole like how proud are you of your blackness thing, because that was a big linchpin of what Kendrick's attacks on him were, you know, essentially saying that he you know, that he doesn't, that he hides from his blackness, essentially, that he kind of embraces the privileges that come with being light-skinned. But I don't really want to talk about that angle because I feel weird talking about that angle as a white
And
person.
it's not our place to say anything about that anyway, so.
So that, but that is an angle that has been part of this. But really, like, the first big bombshell was that, was from Drake, that his allegation that Kendrick was physically abusive towards his partner. There's a lot of grenades that have been lobbed in the last like 24 hours or however long it's been at time of recording, that are just going to take a lot of time to reckon with, especially when there aren't the proverbial receipts. And then there's debates about like, oh, there are some receipts and there are receipts for, that suggest this kind of thing. And it's like you have end up having this big semantics argument about it all. And it just feels strange because we've stepped in, we've stepped so far away from this sort of traditional idea of what a rap beef is, you know, as sort of establishing, yeah, your place in culture and sort of de-establishing the other person's place in culture. And because of the magnitude of the beef, the means to do that has become so great and has become so beyond the pale, essentially, that it's just become something different. It's become something where it's like, it just begins to feel really strange hearing allegations of this seriousness delivered in the context of a medium that has so much frivolity. And it still does, even if you say that the traditional rap beef is dead, these are still songs that are based around, you know, like wordplay and rhyme schemes and doing all that kind of stuff. So it is still like, there's a fundamental level of kind of frivolity to the medium that it's all presented with, especially when both Kendrick and Drake are being deliberately humorous on their songs as well. I mean, not so much on the more recent ones, but certainly in the earlier ones, they were both trying to be funny about it. So it's like the tone has shifted so dramatically, and in some ways it does feel a little bit inappropriately. And it's like, it's tough because it still is spectacle. It still is entertainment. It still is like, it follows logically from the stuff we've been buying into so far, this whole war of who is the good person, who is the bad person. It's just that suddenly when that war becomes like deliberately linked to these, to supposed actions that are this heinous, then suddenly you're thinking about, well, where am I in all of this? Like, what have I been doing? Like, how, what does it say about me that I've been like so invested in all of this to this point that I've like, that it's taken to this logical conclusion and I'm still in there? Hard to say. So we're now in the space where, you know, Drake has made this devastating allegation about Kendrick's conduct, and Kendrick has responded by essentially implicating Drake in covering up what I guess would be best described as deliberate patterns of abuse of women. I don't want to say, some people have said trafficking. I don't think it's appropriate to use that word because that's a, that implies something that, again, this is another problem I have, is the vagueness. Like, this is a, and this is another product of the format, right? Like, where it's like suggestion and hint, and it's like, I'm dropping these bombs, but I'm leaving a little bit back. And so, like, because next time you're going to get a little bit more, and it's going to get a little bit more serious. And that, to me, I really struggle with that when you're talking about things that are this serious. I struggle with playfulness in that context. It seems, and I think with the drop of this new song, Not Like Us as well, like, we only just heard it before we started recording this, but it's so gleeful for Kendrick. And this is, I think, the biggest limit that Kendrick is, limitation of what Kendrick has been doing to me. The biggest thing that's held him back is, I think that he's taking so much joy in this. And like, on one level, right, that makes it fucking awesome. right? Like, he's a super villain. Like, I've seen multiple people say this man is the Grim Reaper, and the
He
way that
called
he's doing
himself the
that,
boogeyman. I mean,
the way that he's kind of leaning into that character of it all, like that's so well fitted for a beef and for what he's doing, and the conceptual framework that he's taken with these individual diss tracks as well, of talking to individual people and presenting it in this way. But at the same time, he's taken so much glee in delivering this. And I'm not saying that's in itself a problem. It makes it feel a little bit like it's harder to believe he's really on the side of righteousness, which he claims to be, and more as though the main reason he's doing all of this is because it benefits him in the context of a beef. And I don't know that. Maybe this was all his scheme to expose the stuff. He chose this to be the format. But really, what it feels like is Kendrick utilizing, and a Drake, I guess, with the abuse allegation as well, utilizing really, like, serious and disgusting information to get a W, basically. And it's just it leads, and maybe, look, maybe 6 months from now, when all this is, we've seen all this out, I'll look back at me saying this and be like, God, you were being such a prude. Kendrick knew what he was doing. But
I think that the skepticism is completely healthy, and I also want to presage what I'm saying with that skepticism, lest I not be taken seriously for what I have to say here. But look, as all of this has been percolating in my head, all I could think of all night after Family Matters was damn. All I could think about was the song Element. Riley, you even mentioned that it's just like, it's almost like a callback to what he was doing on Damn conceptually. And I'm glad you made that point, because that was my point. I think that I'm not like, and I don't want to come across as like, I've got a cork board and I'm connecting the dots here, but like, look at the writing on the wall, guys. When we listen to Pimp a Butterfly, what's one of the last things on that album that he says? When shit hits the fan, will you still be a fan? Kendrick has been talking about shit that pertains to all of this since that album. And again, this is not to say that this is some long harebrained scheme to do this, but my response to what your feeling is that not only do I think that that's healthy skepticism, I think that while we're in the moment, it's our job as cultural commentators to be skeptical of what Kendrick is doing, because Kendrick wants us to be skeptical of what he's doing. He wouldn't be doing this cryptic ass metaphor shit if he didn't want people to be looking into it. So that's to me, that communicates that we are just in a space where we are not taking what's being fed to us at face value in a time where that's very, very dangerous, and we shouldn't do it now that this is where it's at. However, the thing that makes this difficult is that, again, we don't know how this is going to end. And when things are up in the air like that, and when these spurious allegations are here, if like that the righteousness that Kendrick claims to represent is so tenuous, like you said, and both things can still be true at once, is that, I mean, again, Kendrick has been talking about the fact that he's a hypocrite since To Pimp a Butterfly, the fact that he is multifaceted, and fuck, that's what Mr. Morale is all
He's
about, you
brought
know?
it back to his own album multiple times explicitly.
He's not shirking this, he's not avoiding this, and I'm not saying that's indicative of anything. I'm just saying that he's been preparing, like, not that he's been preparing, that insinuates something that I don't mean, but he has essentially been soft preparing people to interact with his work in this way for almost 10 years now. And to me, that doesn't mean nothing. I don't know what it means right now, frankly. And I don't think it's our job to come to any definitive conclusions right now, because we don't have all the information, and you should come to definitive conclusions once you do have that information. And we are not making this video to do that, because it's not our job. But I think that there is a broader point to be made about the ideas that each of these men represent and the validity for the arguments that they're making, that isn't just the mudslinging, that isn't just the defamatory claims. And if this turns out to be true of some nature, we'll probably look back on this and be like, yeah, we were skeptical in the moment, we should have been, but it was nice that this evil person was exposed for their wrongdoing, and then that was that. Or there is the distinct possibility that everything, and I do mean everything, that Kendrick and Drake have been saying at each other is not true. And also keep this in mind, because I think that this point is being, well, it's not even being considered just because it's not been in the cards. But think for a moment. What was the biggest, notable, most musically driven sort of like idea or story of 2023? The demise of the cultural viability of hip hop. The fact that there was no hip hop number one. The fact that country music is like taking back over the charts again. Hip hop's place in culture has waned in some people's eyes. So the two biggest people in this world throwing shit at each other is going to take eyes and put them back on them. I'm not saying that this is some big conspiracy that Drake and Kendrick, or that one of them, or that just Kendrick is doing this in order to bring hip hop back into the spotlight. I'm saying that basically all of these things, like Kendrick and Drake are both smart. I think they know these things. I don't think that we're bringing things to the table that they don't know, because clearly Kendrick, Kendrick has the fucking line. I even know your angle. And I do, the claim is a little bit less viable, but I do think there is something to the timing of Meet the Grams and also the Ozempic line, which I think is a clear indication of Kendrick. Like, again, these are methods of communication as well as songs. So I think the Ozempic picture in Kendrick's diss is meant to imply, hey, your mole leaked this song to me, and when
the picture that the album and, the single cover with Drake's clothes and with the pills, etc. So that was kind of like
basically that was Kendrick telling Drake, I knew you were going to say all of this. And in it, Kendrick does in fact say, you lied about the only rapper that can give you advice. It goes over people's heads because this was fucking like 12 hours ago, but he is clearly talking about himself. He's saying, you lied about me. People are probably going to take more stock in Kendrick Lamar's opinion than Drake's, because that's why at the end of the day, as to predicting things, in my heart says, I don't think Kendrick is going to start a fight that he can't finish. So I'm going to lean towards thinking that this might be something that, regardless of its infinite complexities and the motivations to do whatever he's doing, which we should totally acknowledge is very selfish and very ego-driven of him, that this is not some noble pursuit and that he is not faultless, and he could still be doing this and still be proven to be a domestic abuser. We don't know. Mr. Morale being an album that is all about self-improvement and family, I'm just saying it does make sense, but also I know that Drake and Drake's ghostwriters also know that too, because that's the kind of thing that you're thinking of when you're doing this, when you want to defame someone, not damage them, not dent them. This is not saying this isn't rat beef anymore, misses the mark. This is just two men who legitimately do not like one another, and they do not want one another to be successful anymore. And it's the boiling point. We have reached there will be a point of no return. Like, people kept saying that Meet the Grams was Kendrick's nuke. And my hot take is that I don't believe that's true for a second. I don't. And I mean, we were basically just proven right, that because he released another diss. Like, I don't believe that's the nuke. I don't believe that there really even is one. I think that people are still thinking in terms of old rat beef. They're still thinking in those terms that make them miss what this actually is.
I just don't know that we have a precedent for what this is, to be honest. No, I don't know how we can...
And that's why... And I don't want people to mistake my enthusiasm for being uncritical, I guess, just because... The reason that I do still at the end of the day, like Riley, why I have very mixed emotions, but still hesitantly veer positively when paying attention to what is going on here, is that I still believe in the possibility that something tangibly good could come from all of it. And I will probably hold on to that possibility until I am definitively proven wrong, which may or may not happen. But we have talked about this so much. I mean, like, I can effectively tie my growth as a music listener and my interest in an entire artistic medium to Kendrick Lamar. I owe a lot to the man's music. I don't owe anything to Kendrick. I owe a lot to his music. I want to make that clear. But this whole thing, it excites me a little bit because of the way that culture has been moving in the last 4 years. The reason we started this podcast and this YouTube channel to begin with is because we were tired of how fast it moved, because it's moving so fast that it doesn't allow you to stop and smell the roses, that we're missing out on the tangibly, like, connective part of why art is important and awesome and cool, and why we bond over it. And it's just like, with, again, the speed of the modern world, it's all getting lost in the minutia. We wanted to present a counterpoint to that, and on some grander scale, that is the conflict that is happening here. It is impermanence versus an established cultural norm, and that's why I still want Kendrick to win, because I do believe in that. Like, I believe in the idea of preserving hip-hop as a medium and not diluting it. Like, for whatever opinions you might have about it, it's something that should exist in that form. And I feel like, you know, Kendrick's artistic purity is certainly, like, it's an ego thing. But he does have a point. Like, there is something to it that if we let things continue the way that they are, just on, in a broader level, not just with, like, music, just in general, like, we risk letting the complacency of the people who came before us overtake us and then making the same mistakes. And that's shitty, and I don't want to believe in that. Like, I want to believe in change. Like, I want to believe in Kendrick Lamar. Like, you know, like, it's a deeply fraught conflict, and I feel so strongly about it. Like, I never thought I would, like, this diss would make me legitimately emotional, but I am. It's something that feels close to my heart in a way that, like, that, again, I said it, stakes is high. Like, this is just, it feels like music matters again. Yeah, and that's not nothing.
I totally resonate with that feeling that we're living through a moment where it's like we're all kind of collectively experiencing something with bated breath, and there is, like, consequence culturally. The thing that I struggle with, though, is that I don't like the idea. In fact, I hate the idea that for hip hop to matter again, two people have to tear each other's lives apart. I just think that's, like, I don't want to believe that that's the way forward for revitalizing the relevance of hip hop and culture or whatever. And the thing with Kendrick, that I was saying with Kendrick as well, about you know, very specific in all of this. The thing case you could make for him is that he's doing that to protect the people involved who might have been victimized in these situations, possibly. Uh-huh. But we really won't know, like, what the impact is going to be of this for a while yet. And yeah. I won't feel great about it if it turns out that there's really nothing more specific or substantive that Kendrick can offer, and it just turns into, like, more grist for the rumor mill around Drake being unsavory. Like, we already knew that.
I will lose a not insignificant amount of respect for the man if that is the case. Not that he's going to see this video, but if you want somebody's perspective who, again, if you don't want to keep listening to two white hip hop nerds talk about this and you want someone who probably knows a little bit more of his shit, go watch FD Signifier. He's been covering this beef in pretty extensive detail, and I've been listening to what he has to say a lot. And he said something really interesting today where he's one of the people who does think that this was the nuke for Kendrick, that he's won. But he also said, I think that hip hop might be dead. And that is a melodramatic thing to say. But again, like everything in this conversation, while not 100% true, there is something about that that is true. Hip hop as we know it has changed and evolved over the years into something very different. And now it really feels like we're at a watershed moment where we're really going to be deciding whether or not certain artists' success are going to decide the waves of what's going to happen in the future, just because there's so much upheaval right now, like societally, culturally. Like, it feels like we are in the midst of a mass awakening of sorts, where we just are being constantly thrown into these dilemmas and situations that are emblematic of these greater societal ills. And it's just been like, and struggling with them and grappling with them in ways we haven't before. And that's why this is so weird, is because taking that to a commercial place, to a place where it's also about fame and celebrity and pride and rap, it's not where these things belong. The difference between this is before and this is now are that before there was a line there. Like, yeah, Jay and Nas went at each other's throats and got pretty fucking nasty, but you can chalk those disses down to nothing more than name calling now. And that's also, for the record, not appreciating what they do and accomplish as disses, because I feel like there's an unspoken narrative too about how Drake has been responding to all of this with disses, and Kendrick has been responding with songs. Kendrick's songs are like, his music is, he's intentionally artful because he knows that's what people expect from him. He knows that, like, he's very smartly doing all of that and playing into people's expectations and getting people on his side. He's being savvy. But I still don't think that this is quite over yet, and part of me feels bad for hoping that it's not. But it's just, if this is the end, it's a very disappointing end to a very ugly thing that happened.
Maybe this kind of funereal tone that we're taking will look silly when a little bit of time passes, but it does feel like, you know, it's a bit funereal at the moment. Like, the mood was grim. Around
the fact that we had to get here, you said it, the fact that we had to get here at all is the tragedy, really. Like, it's kind of already happened. And, you know, I actually want to touch on that point that you think that Meet the Grams is a masterpiece, because, like, I don't know what this says, but, like, the most evocative moment in music so far this year for me is the 3 second long span in Meet the Grams when one of the verses ends, the beat drops out, and Kendrick's tone just changes into, like, pure fucking venom when he just says, "and a deadbeat motherfucker who should never say more life." Like, again, full body chills. Like, I like that shit was unreal. I can't believe that I lived to experience what that felt like, but it's so not uncomplicated to feel that way now.
Yeah, look, it's all high theater, high drama, right? And we don't know how real any of it is.
And we'll continue to follow this as it progresses, but I do feel like it's important that we waited substantively to make a video about this because of the way it escalated, because yeah. I feel like any evaluation of this beef before Family Matters basically doesn't even matter anymore. Like, this is, again, whole different ball game now. So here on out, this is, you know, whether or not this is the last we have to hear from Kendrick, whether or not this is the last we have to hear from Drake, literally, again, this is unprecedented. I have literally no idea what is going to happen next. I don't even have expectations. I thought that after Euphoria, my expectation was that, like, oh, you know, Drake's going to come back with some sort of nuke about Kendrick. He's going to drop the ball. And Drake did that. He was effective and he did that, but Kendrick knows that surprise is going to be more effective than validation.
Yeah, I think it would be very interesting to imagine a timeline where Kendrick didn't know about Family Matters in advance, as he clearly did. Because this
yeah, and that's
thing,
another thing. Family Matters, Meet the Grams.
This whole thing, I think, would be playing out very differently if the events of yesterday, before we record this, were different.
A not insignificant bit of context we did miss is that we are also coming to this on the sort of front end of the sort of the bubblings of the Diddy accusations, and how, you know, there is a huge portion of hip hop that right now that includes a lot of very notable people and very notable artists are being exposed for some potentially very serious things. And, you know, OVO, they've got ties. So again, this does line up. If this is made up, it's very smart. That's all I'll give. I don't think it should be made up, but it's a very smart play.
We'll see what happens from here. Really, I think more than anything, this was just an attempt to capture how emotionally complicated this situation is to live through.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it will no doubt, in retrospect, when all this is said and done, seem ridiculously cut and dry, black and white. But when you're experiencing it, when you're going through it right now, it's a rush of feelings. And we'll see what happens. And that's that.